So we're just going to leap in. We've got a busy old morning. Welcome, John.
Kia ora.
I've just done all that. I've forgotten what we were planning.
Well, I suggested starting off with the regional land transport plan, because like all these plans, they review them every 3 years and have a 10-year plan. So regional council has got consultation open till next month on its long-term plan for transport.
So this is going to be buses and roading networks?
Yep. They've done a nice little pie chart which shows you the breakdown of what they're proposing to spend money on, and they're still proposing to spend about a third of it on new roads.
So that's not roads that Waka Kotahi builds?
Well, yes, it's the whole lot. So it's including government spending and local government spending. But it should all be governed by the regional land transport plan.
Isn't it ultimately governed by a government plan, though?
Well, the regional land transport plan has to be approved by the government, so they need to write one that the government's going to approve.
They're going to find that difficult at the moment. I emailed Waka Kotahi a couple of weeks ago to ask about, because I've been trying to, the Greensay Road State Highway 23 intersection's been scary for a while, and things could be done about it, but they're moving so slowly. At the moment, they're not moving at all because they're waiting for the government policy statement. I think that's what they called it, a GPS, to come out.
Yep.
On land transport. And this, John, I don't know what normally happens when there's a change of government, but it feels like they haven't actually had any policy pre-written. They had some bold things that they were going to do and that got the attention of the voters, and they were very effective at that. But then the actual process of governing, they're now going, oh, okay, so what we need, what's that, a government policy statement on land transport? Okay, we better make one of those. And they've discovered that all the local bodies now can't do their long-term plans.
Yes.
Which is supposed, they kind of can. They're supposed to be complete by the 1st of July.
Well, they have to do lots of guessing because they don't actually know what the government's going to do.
So I was reading something that the staff at the district council had written, saying that Simeon Brown, the new local government minister, was basically telling them that they can drop some of their consultation, and then he'll create the right legal framework so that they can't be taken to court if they make any mistakes. So that's really reassuring that they're going to do a good job. They're basically saying you don't have to do such a good job, and if there's any problems, we'll cover you.
Yep, that sounds good summary.
Yeah, those are two things I know about. So I don't know what's happening in other areas, but you wanted to talk about the regional council's roading plans, or no, not their transport plans.
Yep, because the problem with this is that even under the old legislation, the plans didn't have all that much meaning, because a group in Auckland tried to take them to court, and the court said, oh, well, it's only a guideline, it's not something that you can actually bring to court and we can rule on. So it's pretty woolly to start with, because they put in all sorts of great sounding objectives like climate change and environmentally sustainable, energy efficient and low carbon transport system that delivers emissions reductions and enhances communities' long-term resilience to the effects of climate change. So it all sounds very good, but then, as I say, you look at the spending, and almost a third of the spending is going on new roads, which we try and sort out climate change, and you've already had lots of new roads over the last century or so, then it seems to me to be heading in the wrong direction. They're looking at possibly improving the railways, but they're still going to be single-track railways, whereas the roads they're upgrading are going from two-lane roads to four-lane roads. So, you know, it's a sort of contrast between what they're saying they want to do on climate change and what they're actually putting money into. So to me that if lots of people put in submissions, then they might start to take some notice. But as I say, they've still got to get it through the government. So that's one of the problems that they've got.
Yeah, I think also the problem they've got is they're fighting against the whole world on this one. The government's opened the immigration floodgates up again. So there's more people coming into the country, more houses desperately required, which means more roads, so and more cars on the roads. So you can't just ignore that fact, otherwise the economy might ground to a halt or well, at least we slowed up.
Carry on doing transport the way we are doing it, which
which I am assuming with this government, John, and with the last one. And although I mean, we need to restructure. Like we've become dependent on being able to travel easily, and so we there's this concept of the 20-minute city in Europe, which has been quite successful in some cities over there. I understand. We really don't have that here in this country. We have drive half an hour to get that, drive half an hour to get that, and live over there, work over there. There's no, we could save a heck of a lot of fuel costs and driving costs if we could change that.
Because the plan does recognise that. It has a target to reduce the car fleet by 20% or emissions from the car fleet. By 20% by 2035.
Which car fleet? Their personal, like the car?
Well, no, this is the car fleet throughout the Waikato. So okay. All the cars in Waikato to reduce, to have zero emission vehicles for 30% of cars by 2035 and reduce emissions from freight transport by 35%.
But as
again,
you said,
by 2035. So.
As you said, that's not a legislative requirement.
Yeah.
That's a... It's a good plan.
Yes.
And it's a nice plan. I wouldn't say it's a good plan because we don't think it's going to happen, do we?
But it would be good if people pointed out that the plan doesn't actually plan anything that's going to achieve those targets.
Yeah. It's a bit – the hardest part, though, of course, is that we haven't heard from the government what they're expecting. So they at the best of times, they have to – do something the government will sign off, but at the moment they don't even know, the government doesn't know what they'd like to sign off.
Yep, so we've got to the 4th of March, which is next week, to put submissions in on this. At least some people might have a look at the Regional Council website and have a look at their regional land transport plan and say that their targets are great, but their way of achieving them isn't going to succeed.
Yeah, well, I've just given a whole lot of reasons not to do that, but let's give a reason to do that, which is that not a lot of people submit to district council, to regional council stuff. So you even got the name wrong. This is why. So the district council is what our councillor Lisa Thompson is part of. The regional council is the whole region over to the Kaimais down below Lake Taupo, up to Auckland, and people. A lot of this stuff goes under the radar. So if you do make a submission, I think it will stick out a little more in actual fact than the district plan. So you might have a better chance of having a say.
And some things, it's already too late to put in submissions because I've been surprised how little talk there has been about seabed mining. And yet...
That's a regional council thing?
No, this is the Environmental Protection Authority.
Yes.
Or whatever it calls itself, EPA.
I'm interviewing Phil McCabe tomorrow.
Okay.
If that'll help.
Yep, okay. Phil can probably cover that better than I can then, but coming up in the middle of March are the hearings for it. So
so this
Phil,
is the
Phil
last...
will probably be up with what's happening and how successful they're likely to be.
So this is TTR. The Supreme Court told them go back to the start, and so they kind of... So they are, and
they've come up with pretty much the same evidence, which isn't surprising, and they are presenting it again, presumably in the hope that the government, as Shane Jones was saying, is going to just ride roughshod all over the protective legislation and let them do what they like.
It's very hard to be on those panels and just pass it because their evidence is so threadbare. And so there's so many unknowns. So yeah, we'll catch up with Phil about that. John, what else? The long-term plan for district council? Can we even talk about that? Because we don't. At this point, I've had an email about that.
Well, I've been struck by the number of reports that have been put to council committees on it. I've only managed to look at a few of them, but there's all sorts of projections as to what income might be, what rates might be, what they might spend money on, what they might cut, all those sort of things. And I think there's about 30 reports that have been done fairly recently, and they've only looked at a fraction of them.
You have only looked at a fraction.
And I'd be interested to know how many Lisa's read. It seems to me that they're coming out so quickly that I'm not sure how many people are able to actually look at them properly.
Yeah, well, of all the people I know, John, you're the one most likely to be able to read these things. I know Lisa is paid to do it, but there are only so many hours in the day, and technically the councillors are only paid for like a half week or something, although I think they all do more than, well, no, I can't say all of them. I know ours have traditionally. Sometimes I think the rural councillors can get away with not doing too much, but that's speculation. I'm just scrolling through here. Oh, here we go. Financial. So this is an email I got yesterday from Waikato District Council. Financial planning challenges have prompted the District Council staff to recommend that Council pause work on the long-term plan and switch to an enhanced annual plan. Okay, there we go. So when I was talking to Lisa on Friday, she said they would be discussing that this week because with all the unknowns. So, okay, we need to go back a step. Because the government campaigned on stopping three waters and not on doing anything constructive, and once again they've turned up with the legislation stopping three waters and then no plan for later. So it's all been put back on the councils, and they're selling that as freedom for the councils to decide what they want to do, but it's also kind of like the freedom to go into horrendous debt. So
or put rates up enormously.
Have you seen the debate in Hamilton? Their rates were already going to go up 25%, and now they're saying they're going to have to go up more because the government's thrown this issue back at the councils. It's incompetent on behalf of the government. But like I say, they only campaigned on destroying something, not on building something useful.
It was probably incompetent by the previous government in not explaining it properly to the voting public.
And, I would totally agree.
And also chucking money into things like the wharf. So,
well, we're not
much of the money that's gone into the wharf has come from that Three Waters Fund.
We won't complain about that. Raglan as a whole benefited from that, whereas a lot of other, basically the rest of the country has paid for our wharf. Great. That's good for us.
For sorting out the basic problems we've still got.
No. Although, people come here and use our wharf, so maybe fair is fair. But
not $6 million worth.
Yeah. So as I was saying just earlier, the council staff had been telling the councillors that the local government minister was saying, you can forego your normal checks and balances and we'll protect you legally. And I suspect most ethical councillors who care about the area would say that's not really how you do democracy. And they've obviously voted to put off doing their long-term plan. And what they're saying when they say switch to an enhanced annual plan, folks, you need to understand the long-term plan is the council's big spending plan. It's set for 10 years, but they review it every 3 years. So the first 3 years are the most important. In between the long-term plan, each year they do an annual plan, which is a slightly, just small refinements to the long-term plan, John?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's what they'll be doing this year instead of setting a new plan for the next three or 10 years, next 10 years, say. They're just going to do their small adjustment plan and go for a full long-term plan next year. So did you make submissions to the long-term plan? Or did we never get there?
We haven't. The submission period is coming up, so 3 years ago, people did put in submissions, including me.
Yes.
There should have been another one coming up this coming month,
right?
Which would have had another month of consultation, and given the amount of work that they've already done on it, looking at those volumes that they're putting out on reports, I can't see that they're going to change it all that much. And they're also working with a problem of trying to increase the housing and, as you say, all the other facilities that go with housing. And that's a major problem for them, especially given that Futureproof, which they've been working with other local councils to decide just what that strategy ought to be and how much housing ought to be provided and where. In the case of us here, they're saying that it's subject to doing a corridor study and looking at what State Highway 23 can cope with and how much it would cost to do anything to it.
Might it be a little bit late for that, John? We've just seen the announcement.
That's my submission, which hopefully I'll be talking on in a few weeks' time.
I say that because my news item on Friday included the news that, the confirmation, because we knew it was going to happen, of 400 new properties up Tahutawai Road on the Koning Farm will be developed. Now, that's not going to happen right away. They're still basically looking for someone to pay for the upfront costs, which are pretty substantial, obviously, for a subdivision of that size. But yeah, that's 400 on top of the 500 at Rangitahi, and also we know from the
200 at the Ransom Bay or Greenslade Road area.
Yep. Yeah, and that I think Rangitahi got approval for more land to be developed in the last district plan change. So yeah, we're talking about easily over 1,000 new properties. So, and how many average people in a house, John? Like 2.5 or something?
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and our criticism, and when I say our, I mean us here on the radio and most of the politicians in Raglan, has been that the council hasn't done a structure plan. In the long-term plan, they had a list of communities that were going to get a structure plan, and we were down near the bottom of the list.
Yep, because they started on one in 2009, and then they didn't like what we said, so they took it away.
I don't think they didn't like how. I think they didn't like how we said it. I mean, it was a bad plan. They hadn't even thought about what Raglan was about. I heard from someone who had worked at the council and the planning department at the time that one of the senior planners thought we were going to be the next Mount Maunganui. So that was someone who's completely out of touch with the community. So I'm not surprised that happened.
And but again, they hadn't looked at the road, because then we had the experience last year of the road being closed for a month.
Yeah, imagine another 1,000 vehicles.
Well, imagine a lot more than that, because what they're talking about is moving from roughly 3,000 people to 12,000 people.
Over the next 50 years.
Yeah, looking at four times as much traffic going over that road.
Or, John, are they? Because should we be changing the way we live to not do so much blooming travel?
Well, we may be into climate change by then, and we may have actually had to do something about it. But,
yeah, we might have been forced. Our hand might be forced. That's probably what's going to happen, isn't it?
But the way things are going at the moment, unless they create an awful lot more jobs here, then people are going to be increasingly commuting over the hill. And even if they do create jobs, then as we see with most of the building sites on Rangitahi, people commute here from Hamilton, as well as people from here commuting to Hamilton. So local jobs don't necessarily get filled by local people.
Yeah, true. I know that Rangitahi Raglan Land Co has been pushing the telecommute angle, like people who work. I think they might drive to Hamilton a little bit, but not every day, and they can do most of their work from Raglan. So that's nice. But it's the basic problem is that our town's currently being planned by developers, and I'm not directing my anger at the developers. Developers are going to develop. They're going to do what they're going to do.
Well, they can do what they want for their bit of land, but that doesn't look at the overall picture of.
No, can
that road cope with it?
To be honest, I think they do have a bigger plan. Like, I'm pretty sure Raglan Land Co has a bigger plan for Raglan than just their piece of land. But I also don't like that because the whole community should be having a say, not just the people who have happened to have the money at the time. Or have the influence is a better word there. They have the influence. And just give an idea, I talked to, I actually rang property brokers, the agent who's doing the Koning property development, and who's in Morrinsville or somewhere over there. And I just wanted to know of the drawings that we can see. If you go to raglanradio.com, you can see one of our news bulletins, you can actually see the plan. I wanted to know how firm that was, how much of that might change. And I think the things that would probably change is where the internal roads for the development come out onto Tuhutawai Road, because Raglan Land Company has objected to the Tuhutawai development structure plan because they've got ideas about where they want a bypass road to come out past Rangitahi and come out somewhere near the Extreme Zero Waste entrance.
Yep, so it gives room for them to develop and feed into that road.
Yeah. So this bypass road for our community has been decided by two developers saying, no, I want it here, no, I want it here. And council is involved, like it's doing in the forum of council, that decision has been made. But it's absolutely not been made by our community at the moment. So again, no ire directed at the developers. They're doing what they're going to do. We just have got a council that will not do the thing we want, which is some kind of plan for the future of the town.
Yep, because that road in the first place was a concept of Raglan Land Company rather than of the planners, because the planners originally said, oh, we don't want to bypass Raglan because otherwise the CBD will miss out on trade as people go through it. Because if people go straight to the beach and don't come anywhere near the town, then they're not going to go shopping or using cafes or anything else in the centre of town.
So, but do we really want when the four times as many people driving through, or maybe it won't be that many? Another thing that this guy I was talking to said was that, like, because the topic of the bridge would have to be double laned, And the developer's perspective is, hey, we've been paying these contributions, these roading contributions for years now. Where's the bridge? So, you know, where's that money gone? Where's our money gone that we've been paying you for a new bridge? There doesn't seem to be one. So, yeah and that's been put off.
Do you actually need a wider bridge and a bypass, or do you need one or the other? Seems to me that you need one or the other, and that to spend $10 million on each of them around about 2030 is the wrong plan, but we'll see what the long-term plan comes out with if and when we do see it.
I think a bypass would be way, way more expensive than putting another lane on the bridge. I think you're talking hundreds of millions, if not maybe billions. I'm not sure. I'm not an expert on this. But remember, they spent about $2 million on Bankart Street 10 years ago.
Yes.
So you can imagine a bypass.
That was $5 million at that time, but right. Costs have gone up an awful lot since then.
And they were going up during that project, which you noted at the time. And so, yeah, it continues to go up. So, yeah, we got some problems for the future. And today we've announced that they're delaying figuring out what those problems are because the government's made it even harder for them. Fair enough, I think.
Yep. And hopefully there'll be a Maui Dolphin Day coming up this weekend. So
yes,
we'll have maybe some discussions arising from that, because part of the problem is that all the development increases pollution that goes into that sea that the dolphins live in.
Yeah, yeah. And we do you remember last year with the contractor who was doing the work on the land at Rangitahi at the start, and they had that soil spill into the water and they got fined last year?
Yes.
It took a long time for that news to come out, but it finally did come out. Is there anything else we should mention, John? Because we've just kind of focused on a couple of issues, but my interview with Lisa did that as well last time. So
yep,
these big issues are on our table.
I think sewage is another issue, so we're getting the sewage upgrade.
Oh, yeah.
Which is happening finally, but it was originally talked about by Carl when he was the manager for the waters back in 2019. So, you know, it's been about 5 or 6 years coming, and we're still breaching the resource consents on the sewage. And I think you were talking with Lisa about Rapuru's contribution, and it had some errors in it, but there is still a problem with the sewage. So to that extent, it's good that he's raising the issue.
So it's breaching the the consent in terms of too many suspended solids, is that the...
Yes,
so it's
and E. coli.
Right, so the treatment's not working according to the standards that the regional council sets, and as far as we can tell, that's going to stay that way until they build this new plant.
Yes,
but they have
which should be next year.
They've awarded the contract; it'll be finished next year. And
it could have been 6 years ago or 5 years ago. So yeah.
Well, we wanted this land-based system. Now, the interesting thing about that is the quality of treatment of the new system. They've got one up at Metamere, and Lisa talks often about watching the guy who's in charge of it wash his hands.
She's organised a trip up there.
Yeah.
The only problem being that it starts at 7 in the morning up at Kofta. So how many people are going to go from here, I don't know.
Well, I note that I think Angeline Greensill's going to be going. And, of course the Māori part of our community has been very against putting human waste in the water. But it does raise the question if the standards that this new plant are going to do are so clean that you can wash your hands in it, do we get to the point where it's not worth worrying about land-based disposal?
Well, the figures presented on the last video suggested they were only going to be halving the pollution, so they're not eliminating it, but they're halving it, which is moving in the right direction, but still polluting, especially if you've got four times as many people doing it.
And the one thing I want to throw in here at the end of this too, which we very rarely talk about, but in terms of overall pollution for the harbour, it's the animal waste, especially from the north side of the farms on the farms on the northern side of the harbour,
where the streams are less fenced.
Yeah, the riparian management hasn't happened like it has on our side. That's actually a way bigger problem for the health of the harbour than the human waste. So according to, I don't know, I should probably get someone from one of the local scientists on, local science companies on, to talk about it. Yeah. Yeah, so there's that as well. And we might be like focusing on this issue, and we are focusing on this issue, but there might be a worse issue. And a lot of energy going into it. John, thank you for coming in.
Okay, thank you.
You're going to be on the air tonight and cover the stuff we didn't talk about?
Yes.
All right.
And the sun's come out, so it's better than the rain coming out, which I feared.
No, it's going to clear up, yeah. All right, John, thanks for coming in. Folks, we're going to be talking to Ruth Beagle-Hole in just a few minutes. Stand by.